I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. They say it takes a village to raise a child, but maybe you just need a few Mocha Moms. We visit with members of this mother support group each week for their common sense and savvy parenting advice. Today, a story that's been in the news. Did a group of teenage girls in New England decide to get pregnant together? At the end of this school year, 17 girls from Gloucester High School in Gloucester, Massachusetts, none older than 16, were pregnant. That's more than four times the number of pregnant teens the school of 1,200 students had last year. While one of the teen moms-to-be denied the existence of a pact during an interview today on Good Morning America, the Time magazine reporter who broke the story is standing by it. But it all leaves many parents wondering what might influence a group of girls to make such a decision, or even individual decisions. Could it be Juno, the film about a hip teen who accidentally becomes pregnant, or Jamie Lynn Spears, star of Zoe 101, who just became a first-time mom at 17, or something else? To talk about this, we're joined by regular Mocha Moms, Davina McFarlane and Shelley English Figaro, and special guests, Dr. Marilyn Corder, a pediatrician, and Laura Sessions Stepp, who is a journalist and author and a consultant on adolescent issues. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks, Michelle.
First, I need to mention that the mayor of Gloucester says there was no pregnancy pact, but the principal of the high school says there was. Laura, I want to start with you. What do you think's going on here?
I think there are a couple of things going on. One is pregnancy is seen as cool these days, as opposed to when we were in school, you know, it was a shameful thing to get pregnant. That wasn't a good thing, but that prohibited some girls from doing it. Teen girls always run in packs. They always have. At this age and in this era, boyfriend-girlfriend is not so popular, but your girls always stick with you, which raises the question, it's what they're looking for, family. And all of these buddies they had, they're going to raise these kids together. And what does that say about their family? Maybe their families aren't around, or maybe they're on welfare, or maybe they've got lots of other kids to pay attention to. So I think there are multiple factors.
Dr. Corder, I think a lot of things make this story stand out. One is the race of the kids involved. I mean, we've spent a lot of time, I think, in the media talking about, you know, Black and Latino girls getting pregnant as teenagers. And in fact, the pregnancy rate for Black girls in particular has dropped tremendously over the last decade. The fact that, you know, white girls have the lowest teen pregnancy rate in the population, but even though there's starting to be an upswing there, what do you think is going on here?
Yes, it's interesting. When I saw that, I said, you know, that's what I see in groups of girls and teens that will say, let's do this as a pack, let's do this. You know, like we all go and get tattoos and we all go and get drunk. Well, we're all going to go have this baby. So it was more of this is a belonging, extended family of we can do this together. Then that takes away the shame, that takes away the taboo. It's not you singled out, it's us together.
Have you seen this before, though, pregnancy sort of being viral?
Back in the early 80s, I was medical director of the school, the first school-based clinic in D.C., which is Ballou. And we had 35 girls come in who were pregnant. And it was interesting. They basically said, well, it's nothing else to do, and it's going to be okay, and I'm going to have the support of this person and that person or this agency versus we are doing it as a cooperative gesture.
Hmm. Davina, I'm going to start with you. I know your girls are a little young for this. They're pre-adolescent, but you're raising other teens as well.
Yes.
Do you envision this as something kids would do as a pact?
It doesn't necessarily surprise me. Again, I am from New England, so I know a little bit about the area as well. And it's an economically depressed area. If you're not going into the fishing industry, there's not a lot going on for a teenager in Gloucester, Massachusetts, unfortunately. It's sad to think that this is the thing they turn to. And also, it speaks a lot about what's going on in their community. These girls felt like they were definitely going to be supported, and they are supported. There's a clinic in their school. There's a daycare facility in their school. So they felt like they were definitely going to be protected, and there was nothing wrong with it. Not one thought for the fact that I'm 17 and I'm going to have a child, and my child is going to have a 17-year-old mom. Mm.
Shelley, what do you think about this? I know you and I grew up
both
in New York.
Both in New York.
And at the time when, I think that the transition was just starting to take place when Laura was talking about how the fact when we were coming up initially, getting pregnant as a teenager was something you did not want to advertise.
It was taboo.
But it was starting to change. It was starting to be a thing where it was a status thing.
Well, you're a little younger than I am, Shelley.
Right. Not that much. But it was starting. I remember when it started to change that girls used to go south or they'd go home to the islands when they got pregnant, and that started to change. They didn't go south. They stayed right there in school.
Right.
Shelley?
I have two daughters, and
certainly one, the oldest one is 8, so we're not quite in that adolescent stage yet. I think what I know for sure is when Jamie Lynn Spears got pregnant, for 2 seconds I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I hope my daughter doesn't find out. That was my 2 second reaction, because she loved Zoe 101. And then after that 2 seconds, I said, oh no, this is going to be a teaching moment. Let me school this child. Let me tell this 8-year-old what the deal is. And I told her, I said, let me tell you something. She got pregnant. She made a bad mistake. Getting pregnant as an unwed teen is a bad thing. And let me tell you why. And this is really important, because see, I think children don't see the negative in having a baby when they see stars having babies.
Right.
Because when a star has a baby, they have a C-section, they get the tummy tucked, they get the lipo sucked out, they have a nanny, a chauffeur, a cook, a laundress, and a butler in a big mansion, and no one's life gets to change. They get to take the little baby out like a little accessory and look great in their $2,000 stroller. So I had to tell my child...
You don't have that?
I had to tell my child that this is not your reality.
Do you buy that, Laura, though? Do you think that having stars, having babies like Jamie Lynn Spears really affects the thinking of girls?
I think it does. It's such a pop culture now. The pop culture has become these girls' another family, another surrogate family. And, you know, we have in this culture, we have mothers dressing up their little 3- and 4-year-olds to look like hookers.
Absolutely.
You know, there's this whole popular culture emphasis on sex. I mean, it's wonderful that you've talked to your daughter at 8 years old. We should be talking to them about sex much younger than we do. And that raises a point, interesting point for this community to me. It's a Catholic community. It's a very conservative Catholic community. There's a whole debate about whether they should even have contraception in the schools. In fact, they decided not to. And so I think community standards are a piece of this. But in this case, it looks like the standards may have worked backwards, so that they don't get the contraception, the advice about all this that they need to, and the frank talk about sex that you mentioned.
I wonder if they had contraceptive in school, or if they had access to it, if it would have done any good, because these girls wanted to get pregnant.
I understand
but I think could it have been if they'd gotten the. I mean, what message do you think it sends, Laura? If there is or is not contraception in school, what message do you think
it sends? We're talking about comprehensive sex education. We're talking about telling girls at 7 and 8 years old it's not right to have sex, and if you're going to have sex, be safe. I mean, it's a social message that you're sending out, whether or not you have to have contraception to do that or not. I suspect that those kind of conversations that you say you had with your daughter were not going on as much as they should in the family.
But I think the argument would be that the parents should be having those conversations.
Right.
I would assume that the community's argument here is that this is a conversation I should be having at home.
But how many do? They don't. We see teen births now on the upswing, as you mentioned before. It's not, you know, Sarah Brown, the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, she's been working in this field forever. In a sense, what she says is that it's not just about comprehensive sex education, it's comprehensive family education.
Right. Do you, Dr. Korda, do you buy the argument that having celebrities having kids out of wedlock, a movie like Juno, even though Juno did not make it like fun and cool and hip, I thought it suggested that this is not easy. This is a difficult dilemma. It's not just smooth sailing here. But do you think that that has an effect on the way kids think about
pregnancy? Well, first
pregnancy?
We have to address and recognize psychologically where 15-year-old girls are. And they're still in fantasy land. And it's interesting what we do in several of the programs I run here in the district is we have this reality doll, and it's computerized. And we have a young lady who thinks she wants to become pregnant, as well as some of them who are already pregnant. And we say, okay, this is your doll. Let's have a little naming process. You didn't have the labor to have it, but we're going to allow you to skip over that and take the doll home. Within 24 to 48 hours, she's back screaming, oh, I can't take it. The baby cries, and whatever is going on, you have to decide if he needs burping, if he needs to be changed, if he just needs attention. And it's 24 hours. And that baby has significant needs, and the young lady has to decide who's going to be the babysitter, what's going to happen with school. Some of the reality checks that they don't realize until that baby's there and their friends are elsewhere having a good time.
I'm Michelle Martin. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News, and I'm talking with the Mocha Moms about the so-called pregnancy pact at Gloucester High School. You think some of that works, giving kids you know, an egg or something, or a puppy that they have to be responsible for really makes an impression? You think?
Yes.
I see all you guys are nodding.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It seems unbelievably corny to me.
Absolutely. Oh, no, it's not corny at all. Yeah, My son, I have a son who's almost 15.
Yes.
Okay, and he has two little sisters. And sometimes I pay him because it's not his job to take care of his sister. So I do pay him when he needs to babysit. And I'm telling you, after 5 hours, he's like, get me out of here. That's reality. And I say, see, this is real life with real children. Get ready, but be ready much later.
It's not babysitting, it's birth control.
Right? And absolutely. And it's and lessons learned. And they now have a show. I mean, I'm not promoting any television shows, called Reality, Baby Reality, where couples will say, I'm ready. You know, they're in love and gleaming around. But when that baby is in your face 24 hours, mm-hmm. then you can see.
Laura, you've written a lot about the kind of world, particularly adolescent girl sexuality, and how that's changed over the years. What, from the reporting you did for your book Unhooked, which is, I think, slightly older population, girls,
right,
college
high school
age,
and college,
high
yeah.
school and college, but these girls are in high school. Is there something about the way girls think about sexuality these days that you've discovered from your reporting that might offer some clues about why these girls, if indeed they did make this pact, did
so? Well, I was thinking about that. Here's what I concluded. To them, sex is often not within a relationship. They hook up. Their real friendships are with their girlfriends, not with boys. And so they see families and relationships on one end, and they see sex in the other. And there's no more of this sense of responsibility of the man, or, you know, feeling compassion and planning your life or any of that stuff. They're very distinct parts to their lives. What I think that does is it says, okay, I'm going to have sex. I'm going to have a baby. One of the reporters said one of them was a 24-year-old homeless man. I mean, that's not a relationship. You know,
he's a sperm donor.
He's a sperm donor. And that's what they were seeing these men as, I think. I don't know the other boyfriends, but it seems to me that that says he's a sperm donor. I'm going to have this baby. I want this baby. I can raise this baby on my own. And that echoes some themes that are in their culture at large.
Mm-hmm. Davina, Shelley's talked to us about the kind of messages, kinds of conversations she's having with her daughter, her older daughter, younger one's only 3, so we can wait on some of this, about these issues. What are there conversations you're planning to have as a result of this?
Absolutely. There's a conversation that I had with my 16-year-old nephew when Jamie Lynn Spears was first announced that she was pregnant. We had a long conversation about it. I think not often enough do we talk to our sons about what they are doing sexually. We always talk to the girls and, you know, make sure you're safe and, you know, you don't want to get pregnant. But I don't know that we talk that much to our sons.
But the advantage mm-hmm. that your son has and that your son has and your son has is that they all were raised within committed relationships with two parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering how you have that conversation when you don't have an example standing in front of you of what you want your child to have and say, this is what you should be aspiring to.
The 16-year-old that I refer to is my nephew, and he is the child of a single parent. He lives with me now, but I did not raise him from birth. So he is very well aware of what it's like to grow up in a single parent home, because he has. And he knows, I see a big difference between what it was like when I was with only my mom to where now I'm with my aunt and uncle.
I want to go to Dr. Corder on this, because you've got a lot of patients who don't have an example in the home to contrast with. What are some of the ways that you think a parent could be effective in talking about this?
Well, you know, with the void that those young person, let's say if some male and his mom, and she has 5 or 6 children, she's working every day. And example, if he gets arrested, you know, we talk to him in correction, we talk to him outside in private practice. And a lot of times they hurt, they don't know why they're hurting, and they're looking and reaching out. And we then say, well, what would you do if you have a child? And sometimes as they're talking about responsibility, they're more mature than, let's say, that absent parent. And they get upset. And I said, it's okay. You're this age. But now we're going to make a difference and turn that around. And the responsibility of what it is like to be a parent, you're not ready for right now. And contraception. And, you know, we even talk about some of the STDs and what can happen to that baby before the baby's born, as well as even afterwards.
Final thought, if I could, from each of you about it. I'll start with Davina over here. What conversations do you hope might arise as a result of this story once we've gotten past the gee whiz factor here?
One, you know, I wish that unwed pregnancy wasn't so glamorized. As Shelley mentioned earlier, you know, you see all these celebrities and they, you know, they look great and it's all cute and it's all, you know, very glamorized. And I wish that it weren't. You know, if you're 30 years old and you decide to have a baby, that's one thing. But if you're 16 and you decide to have a baby, that's a whole different ball of wax. And I wish that that part weren't so glamorized.
Shelley?
Yeah, I think just the parents have to take a hold of this issue. We can't blame the media. We can't blame the fact that society is going down to hell because, frankly, you know, several generations ago, women didn't even wear skirts above their knees. So, I mean, the culture clearly has gone so far away from us that we don't, you know, we just can't even control it. So parents have to control it. We have to step up to the plate. And so, you know, talking to your children about the consequences of having a child, that's where you need to start.
Okay. Laura, final thought from you?
I think parent education here is what's really important. We tend to say, okay, family is a self-supporting unit, whether it's a single or a couple. We don't, as a community, we're not going to get involved in what they do in their personal life. But what I think can happen is that I know I do a lot of speaking to parents groups, and they are dying for information. I mean, it's just astonishing what they don't know. And that's where communities, school boards, county councils, the community itself, and Gloucester is a community that could do this, is to say, okay, this is a community-wide phenomenon, and we need to help everyone, including the parents, and bring them in and bring experts and pediatricians and so forth to talk to them about what it means to raise a child and how to teach your child how to raise a child.
Dr. Corder,
and
final
I think that as a follow-up with that reality, such as programs that will have that person being accountable prior to even thinking about being a parent, what it is like from day to day. It's a 24-hour. Having your providers, your health providers, do programs, comprehensive teaching programs, assisting the parents to talk to their child. And if nothing else, this is our way to say adolescents, teenage mothers of teenagers, talk to your child to find out what's on their mind.
The Mocha Mom, Shelley English Figaro and Davina McFarland joined us as usual in our Washington studio. We were also joined by Laura Sessions Stebb. She's a writer and an author. Her latest book is Unhooked. Dr. Marilyn Corder is a pediatrician in Maryland. She's also an assistant professor of pediatrics at Howard University and George Washington University Medical Schools. They also were kind enough to join us in our Washington studios. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Let's talk more tomorrow.